Okay, a few minutes late here, but we should get started. All right. So we're going to look at some applications of using these tangent plane approximations to approximate something more interesting than just a abstract, you know, polynomial here there. So a little setup here. In kind of the 1D input, there's some notation you may or may not have seen before. It involves differentials, right? You have a setup like this. Y is a function of x, you graph it, no problem. You don't need 3D graphing it. And you have kind of a base input. And then you have the corresponding base output. And then x is equal to, you think of it as the base plus a change. And so if you solve that for delta x, you get, of course, x minus x naught. And this will also just be called dx. The thinking is that delta is exact change of something. And the differential is a possibly approximate change, right? And the idea here is that the input, you know exactly how much you're changing it, so the approximation is there's no error in the approximation. Where there is possibly an error is when you look at the outputs. Which you could write in various ways. But I'll boil down to looking at the new output, so to speak, right? Minus the old output. And the approximation we use for this is just the derivative, right? Think of f prime as dy over dx, right? And this makes perfect sense, right? They just cancel, right? This is how I usually define dy. I define it as the derivative times the change in the input, right? So then dy over dx literally is the derivative. Now, two-dimensional inputs, it's similar. Similar notation. So it's just basically notation for the stuff we did last time. Thank you. two numbers that you input, and the thinking is that you know how much you're changing the inputs exactly. Okay, so the differentials are exact there. And what else do we know? So the base output, right, would just be plugging into the function at the base point here. And base input point. And then, like last time, the change. Which you can denote with various different combinations of symbols is just what it sounds like. Change in the inputs. Right? Plug in the new point, see what f is, subtract it from the base point. Right? You can also write this more briefly as z minus z naught. Right? Just like you could write this one more briefly as y minus y naught. And so this is called the total differential. So with functions of one variable, there's a very natural way to define the differential. You take an exact change in input, multiply it by the slope, that's your change in output. If you have a differentiable function, f here, right, then the way you define the differential is a little more complicated now, because you have to take into account there's an x slope and a y slope. So you have x slope times change in x plus y slope times change in y. And so the idea is just as a delta y can be approximated by dy, right? Here we're approximating delta z by z. And the approximation is good if the input changes are small, right? So you want these input changes to be small. If they're not small, then this could be a very bad approximation. But if they're small enough, this should be a great approximation.
I just mean, when I write squiggly equals zero, I just want it to be small, right? For some imprecise sense of small. Not too big, right? And not too big can depend on the context, right? Compared to a million, one is pretty small.
Yes.
Right? So, but compared to a half, one is big, right? So, or at least not small. The precise statements is all about limits and so on, but in practice, you just make it small enough and the approximations get good. So let's see here.
This is just some notation for the, we talked about this kind of thing last time, the tangent plane approximation, but now I've got little d's everywhere. It's the same thing. All right, so let's see what we can do with this.
Okay.
Geometrically, this is just like last time. We're approximating a surface by a tangent plane.
That's all that's going on.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let me give you an example, okay?
Something that's not just an abstract function, okay?
So how about a column? All right. Let's say I have, you know, like one of those snow cone cups or something, right?
I'm making it a little bigger for purposes of seeing it more easily.
Okay, so we have a cone. It has some radius. It has some height. Okay. It's a right circular cone, if you want to get picky. So the volume really is pi over 3r squared h. Right. 1/3 base times height formula. The base is pi r squared. Okay. And of course you could go back to chapter 6 from calculus 2 to prove that. In similar triangles if you want to, but anyways. I have the cone, let's put some numbers on it. Let's say that the radius is, I'm imagining some kind of snow cone here. Let's say it's 5 centimeters and how much should the height be? 20 centimeters. Okay?
20 centimeters might be a little long.
15. Yeah, close enough. All right. You can go buy a real snow cone and take measurements. All right. Okay. So. Cone. And I want to have a little more, right? I want to have my actual cone. I want to have my actually snow in my cone, right? Yeah. Okay. Don't forget the important part. Yeah. Okay. So I need a little hemisphere there, right? So a sphere has 4/3 pi r cubed volume. So this will be 2/3 pi r cubed. Okay.
All right.
Okay, so there's my snow cone. And cone plus hemisphere there. So what I'm wondering now is, what if I want to have a different shape? For example,
you could ask, what if I made the snow cone wider but shorter? What would happen to the volume, right?
Well, not a big change, just a little change. So let's see, wider, so r should increase. Say h decreases by the same percentage. Make it 5% shorter, 5% wider.
What do you think? Will we have more volume, less volume?
I think more too.
Okay.
All right. Get a quick approximation here. You can, of course, compute this exactly
if you want, but
let's first try the approximation. Assuming that 5% isn't too big a change for the approximation to be decent. So I'm just going to go for approximately here. Okay, so the actual change we're going to approximate using a total differential. So I need to have partial v, partial r, times dr, plus partial v, partial h, times dh. Okay, so I need some partial derivatives. And I also need to know what dr and dh are. Well, dr is going to just be 5% of r naught, right? You like how I complete the rule? It's just 5% of r, so 5r over 100. And h is negative 5h over 100, right? Because it's going down by 5%. Those are the changes. We know those exactly. They're given. All right, let's see what we got. Okay, take the r partial. Treating h as a constant, we have pi thirds h as a constant multiple of r squared, which has derivative 2r. So we have 2 pi over 3 r h. And then we have to take the derivative of this term. So we're going to have 2 pi r squared, because the derivative with respect to r is 3r squared here. It cancels the 3 down there. And then we have h partial derivative. Okay, so now we're going to hold r constant, take the derivative of volume with respect to the height. Okay, so holding radius constant, we have a constant multiple of h. The derivative of h is just 1. So we just have pi thirds r squared. And then over here, this is all constant, so the derivative with respect to h is 0. If we hold r constant, then the derivative of this thing is 0, right? Because it'll all be constant, right? If r is constant, so is r cubed. So when I take the partial derivative with respect to h, the red term contributes nothing to the derivative. And hence the 0 over 2. Okay, so that's the core computation there. The rest is just doing some algebraic simplification to get an actual number. Any questions about this?
Yeah. Can you please just explain that part when you start changing v, is approximation of the derivative of v, that part right there?
So I'm thinking of v. I'm imagining like I have instead of an x and y and z axis, I have an r, an h, and a v axis. And I graph v as a function of r and h, and I get some kind of, third degree, cubic polynomial surface here. It's differentiable, it has tangent planes everywhere, and so we're going to be using the tangent plane.
And how are you getting the derivative of r as 5r over 100?
That's the change in r.
Right. Okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah. We're changing r by r is going up by 5%.
So that's the 5 over 100.
Right. So in particular, it would be 5% of this. So
2.5 millimeters, I think. Yeah.
And this is the 5% decrease in height. All right. Now, I asked for what percentage does V change. So this would tell me how much the volume changes. But what I'm actually after is the percentage change in V, right? So we're going to need to know what dV over V is. But before we get to that, we should simplify this thing. It's kind of unruly. See if there's any like terms I can collect. Mm. we're going to have an R squared term, an R cubed term, and R squared H term right here. So I can combine it with another R squared H term over here. Let's do it. Yeah. Right, because here we'll have 2/3 pi r squared h from here times a 500th. And then here we have minus, right, pi thirds r squared h times 500. So there's some cancellation there. A modest simplification. And then here we have 2 pi r cubed, factored out the 500s. Percentage change.
How do you get again the 5/3 r squared height plus 2 pi r to the third?
I do some algebra. So you have r times r times h. So that's an r squared h.
Maybe I can annotate it more. No?
And then the same thing over here, r squared h.
Okay. So y'all can crunch the numbers on your calculator.
But I think you should agree that this is a positive number. So the volume does increase. It's just a question of what percentage change, right?
Three.
Much better.
Okay. Much better. I can almost do it in my head now. Let's see here.
20 and 30, right? Over 20 and 10. Okay, the centimeters cancel, of course. Okay, so 5 over 3. Too many steps. 50. 20 times 30. Over 60, 1 over 12.
Yes.
Okay. So.
So if you make the snow cone 5% wider and 5% shorter, the volume will be 8 1/3% greater. Yes.
How do you get h plus 6r over h plus 2r?
Well, I had to go from here, right? And I had to do some algebra. So what I did was I took the numerator, and I have the denominator. Okay, and I noticed that pi r squared is a factor of both terms in the numerator and both terms in the denominator. And then I also noticed that there was a fraction that I didn't like, the third. So I multiplied both by 3 to get rid of that third, and I divided both by pi r squared to cancel out that common factor. So I guess that thing. Not necessary. I mean, I could have done all this in my calculator. I just didn't feel like it.
If it depends on what you're better at. If you're better at algebra, then maybe you want to do the algebra. If you're better at typing things into your calculator and not making a mistake, type it into your calculator and don't make a mistake. I make plenty of calculator mistakes and algebra mistakes, although I think I got the algebra right on this one. More questions about this example? Okay, let me take some pictures.
This thing? You know, that symbol
I should look it up on Wikipedia. I don't know the exact history of the symbol. I don't know where it came from. It's not part of any alphabet I know. It's just used for partial derivatives in calculus. It's kind of a weird backwards six, and it's the partial derivative symbol. In topology, it also gets used to represent the boundary of a region. I might actually do that later. If I talk about the boundary of a 3D region in this course, I'll talk about the surface. But, anyways, it's just the partial derivative symbol. Maybe somebody more learned in the history can tell me what the historical name for the glyph is. I still got to take pictures. We call it partial because we're only changing part of the input. We're only changing one variable at a time. We're holding all the other inputs constant. I know that much. I know the concepts, but sometimes I don't know the history of all the weird little glyphs.
So it's not a Greek letter?
No, it's not a Greek letter. Yeah. I know that Leibniz pioneered the use of the lowercase d, right? And I know that Newton was the one that used things more like primes, so although he would actually put a dot on top of the function. This is partial V, partial R. So treat H as a constant, treat R as an input variable, take the derivative of this formula over here. Right? Does that help?
Yeah, because I still see, if you're using in the first term, you're using H as a constant.
Yeah.
Why still H appears on this side?
Because we're taking this is the derivative with respect to r, okay? So you should think of this as pi thirds r squared times 20 centimeters. 20 centimeters is a constant multiple of r squared, right? So take the derivative, you have pi thirds times 20 centimeters times the derivative of r squared, which is 2r. I got lazy, I will admit, that I didn't put the little subscript zeros on everything here. It just would have been too cluttered. Sometimes you need those to avoid confusion, but I think it was hopefully clear what we were doing without all the little subscripts. Bring this one down a little bit. Okay. Well, as usual, I only have time for about half of what I had planned. Y'all got the snow cone example, but there isn't time for the special relativity example. maybe I can work that in later. I'm not going to try and do the special relativity I suppose I could make the special relativity a homework problem.
Yes, you'll love that.
We can wait
for it. Okay, here we go. So we have... We have reference frame 1. And I'm going to use capital X's here. Okay. And then here we have reference frame 2. Let's see here. I'll put the time axis up here. There we go. Okay. Now, reference frame 2 is moving, okay, relative to reference frame 1. Okay. And this is a constant. If it's more complicated, it's not a constant. You want that? No worries. There's already going to be enough to do here. Right? And okay, so there's a formula that Einstein and what's the other guy's name? Minkowski. They both figured this out, and it tells you the connection between these. Now, it's a little more complicated than what Newton would have used. If v is close to the speed of light, okay, then it turns out that not only is there going to be a kind of a transformation in how we measure position, but also how we measure velocity. So there's a Greek letter v, or beta, is equal to the speed over c. Let's say that you're going at half the speed of light. Okay? And then there's another thing called the gamma factor. That is a Greek letter. The gamma factor essentially tells you by how much it's going to appear that time, you will think that the other guy is moving more slowly.
Is that because you're going fast, so the time is moving slower for you than everybody else?
It's complicated. It's paradoxical too. I'm getting that to a minute. So, write down the coordinate transformations here. Okay, so you can think of it. It's a symmetrical relationship. Okay. Okay. Now, to make things simpler. We're going to we're
going to do things in... I don't want to have a bunch of C's popping around, so this is going to be in seconds, and this is going to be in, say, light seconds. So the distance light travels in the second. Okay, so what's the formula? Okay, so it's going to be a little gamma of, we're going to have, so this guy, his position is, compared to the, you know, he might think he's a, you know, he might think something is just right here the whole time, whereas from X's point of view, that's, you know, little x point of view, that's going way out there. This may be a bridge too far. Partial derivatives, the paradoxical result that reference frame 1 thinks reference frame 2's clock is slow, but reference frame 2 thinks reference frame 1's clock is slow. I'll have to come back to that. So
it's not like one thinks the clock is fast and the other one thinks it's slow.
No, it's a symmetrical situation, right? From the point of view of reference frame 2, reference frame 1's clock is slow.
Yes, because this also is applying the way that the
Okay, so,
I won't try to inflict the special relativity problem on you for the homework. I need some more time to explain what's going on, because you have to do the transformation both ways. This is a little more reasonable to ask. All right.
Mm-hmm.